Welcome to another episode of the End Zone Podcast here. Thursday night, we're around, let's say, just under 3 days away from the start of Super Bowl 56, the Los Angeles Rams and the Cincinnati Bengals at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, California. Usual gang is here. Me, Trajan Watkins, the usual co-host, and Eric, the usual actual host. He's handing the hosting baton over to me for tonight because he is apparently in a sticky situation when it comes to the internet. Eric, how are you tonight, man? And I know the whole internet situation is kind of weird for you, so how are you?
It's good. Right now, it looks like I have full connectivity. I have all four of the Wi-Fi bars up here on the top of my screen, so I feel good thus far. But we will see what happens, Trey. But I mean, I'm glad to talk to you. You know, Super Bowl week. Obviously, had a good show Monday. Got a lot out of the way. Did some talk on storylines. We're hoping to keep this one a little shorter and just get your picks, and we'll talk about why we feel the way we do. I hope there's some disagreement a little bit, but if not, this will be a pretty short episode and hopefully digestible on your morning commute. So you can hopefully check this out tomorrow morning and Saturday morning and Sunday before the game. And yeah, this will be nice.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As for the matchup on Sunday evening, well, in LA will be around Sunday afternoon, I believe. But as for the matchup on Sunday, I don't think anybody really expected this matchup. Maybe for the AFC side. On the NFC side, the Rams invested a crap ton of draft capital into premium assets like Von Miller and a multitude of other guys. You know, they were pretty invest heavy in the waiver wire with Odell Beckham Jr. Which he's turned out to be a really, really good insurance option because of the season-ending injury to Robert Woods. So it'll be an intriguing matchup for sure. I'm kind of struggling here to just sort of, I guess you could say, conclude to a winner here, because usually my gut in this sort of situation would make me lean towards picking the Rams because they're at home for only the second time in history a home team has hosted the actual Super Bowl, you know, and they're playing it. So they're at home. They have Matthew Stafford, a really good offensive line, a respectable running game, an impressive array of weapons. And although their defense isn't as suffocating as it was last year, it's still a respectable unit under Raheem Morris. It's a lot of I guess you could say there's not a lot of household talent, like collectively. I mean, you have the Aaron Donald, you have Jalen Ramsey, you have Von Miller. But aside from that, Eric Weddle as well, but he's on the older side. But aside from that, there isn't really a lot of household talent on that defense. But the Rams are a really intriguing team, you know, not just for Super Bowl reasons, but to evaluate them for, you know, the 2021 season as a whole. So they'll have their hands full on Sunday against a Bengals team who, Eric, I know we've both been sort of critical, I guess you could say, of this year, but they've sort of scratched and clawed their way into a really gritty playoff appearance against the Raiders. Then they went on the road to Tennessee, won there, went on the road to Kansas City, miraculously won there after the dramatic second half comeback, and now they're here. One win away from completing a season nobody in their dreams would have thought would occur, you know, based off the talk around the team in the offseason. So, Eric, what's your feeling around the Bengals? And, you know, well, not just the Bengals, but this matchup as a whole, because it's on paper, it's intriguing, you know. Maybe it's not as sexy as Rams, you know, Chiefs or Packers Chiefs or whatever, but it's still an intriguing matchup on the X's and O's side of things. So, what's your sort of take on this matchup, what we have on Sunday?
Yeah, it's really a case, I think, of talent versus momentum. And if you're picking the Bengals, you are picking momentum, because this team has momentum like no other team in the NFL right now. They have done the unthinkable, and as a four seed, gotten some big wins, two on the road, one against the number one seed in the AFC and a team that, you know, both of us late in the season thought might be a Super Bowl contender in the Titans, and then getting a win in Arrowhead against the best quarterback in the NFL. I know he didn't play that way during the regular season, but once we got to the postseason, it was very clear Patrick Mahomes was the best quarterback. And the Bengals walked into that house, and Trey, they beat him. They beat him badly. And I tend to think that if you're picking the Bengals, you believe that momentum will carry in Sunday. If you're picking the Rams, you're picking the Rams because of the tremendous talent they have on both sides of the ball. So that's really what I think this matchup comes down to. It just depends on what kind of, you know, sports fan you are. If you're more analytical and you like to look at numbers and how teams stack up on paper and, you know, PFF grades and all this and all that, you're probably looking at the Rams and saying, well, how can the Rams lose this matchup? But if you're doing it based on gut feeling, you know, you're looking at it and you're saying, well, how can I pick against Joe Burrow? This is one of the greatest stories in sports right now. And they're on such an amazing run. I have to go with the high hand. So that, to me, is what the matchup breaks down.
Yeah, and, you know, you brought up a good point. You know, if you're erring on the side of, you know, which team has the hot hand and the analytical side. But, I mean, let's look at it this way. The Cincinnati Bengals, although they're talented, they're still a flawed football team. You know, of course, they have Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, C.J. Uzomah, Joe Mixon. Their offensive weapons are absolutely incredible. But still, the one thing that's concerned me, and it's maintained its status as a concern over the last, the last three playoff games for the Bengals is their offensive line. I mean, against Las Vegas, since the Cincinnati Bengals offense was rolling in the first half, but as soon as the second half hit, Max Crosby and the rest of that Raiders defensive line started getting pressure, and they really made that Cincinnati Bengals offense come to a standstill. Now, some of that can be attributed to Zach Taylor's play calling, which I will admit was not top quality during that portion of the game in the second half, but that Cincinnati Bengals offensive line still remains a valid concern. Just going back to the Tennessee game when the Titans tied the all-time playoff record for sacks. They sacked Joe Burrow 9 times. And the only reason the Bengals really won that game in spite of Joe Burrow getting put on his butt time and time again is because Ryan Tannehill and Todd Downing put in an all-time stinker, one of the worst offensive stinkers I've ever seen. And, you know, going back to, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs game, that Kansas City Chiefs game, the Bengals offensive line wasn't as much of a problem as the previous two games, but they still had Joe Burrow scrambling around and fighting for his life, trying to get throws off. So the offensive line still remains a big time concern for me for the Bengals. And as for the Bengals, you know, defense on the side of the ball, you know, against the premium talent they play, you know, the Chiefs and the Titans, they've had their lapses and points where the defense just looks out of sorts. I mean, in the Tennessee game, the Bengals really, you know, had their grip on Todd Downing and Ryan Tannehill for much of the game. But there were times in which A.J. Brown is a really, really good receiver. There were times where A.J. Brown simply just running naked free and just making incredible plays, catching the football down the field. It was truly a special performance by him. And the Chiefs game, you know, the first half, the Chiefs were dominant. They couldn't do any wrong against the Bengals defense until the last play of the second quarter. And, you know, and then, of course, in the second half, Lou Anarumo, and that Bengals staff really put some things together and put that Chiefs offense, you know, in quicksand and really stopped their momentum moving forward. But that Bengals defense, I mean, It doesn't have the most insane talent. Trey Hendrickson is good. Sam Hubbard is good. Jesse Bates is good. Mike Hilton, of course, is good. But there are some times where that Bengals defense just doesn't look like it belongs anywhere near the big stage, you know? So it'll be interesting, because if the Rams can get out, you know, out to a lead, the Rams have a decent enough run offense to where they can somewhat control the clock and put the Bengals in a tight position in terms of trying to mount a comeback and win a title. But I don't think I could put that past them either way, because the second half of games, the past two games, the Bengals defense has really found a way to make the necessary adjustments and come back and shut offenses down. So honestly, it's just a weird sort of matchup that I can't really get a secure grip on, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think you make really good points on how the Bengals ended up getting here. It just depends on if that kind of magic and that kind of terrific, you know, defensive game planning to carry over against a really potent Rams offense and, you know, a great Rams defensive line. So what I want us to do right now, now that we've broken down the matchup a little bit, Trey, is I want you to tell me who's going to win the Super Bowl and why.
Looking over both these teams, what they present to the table and the X's and O's personnel-wise, I think I'm going to go with the Rams here. And, yes, it's an easy choice. Boo me all you want. But the Rams have incredible talent, a proven staff, Sean McVay. You know, he's still young. He's made some mistakes, especially in that NFC Championship game in the second half. But he's still a proven coach with a proven track record. Matthew Stafford, if he can stay away from turnovers, which I think he can, and if he doesn't try to force the ball down the field to a multitude of other, I guess you could say, weapons down the field, then I think the Rams will be in good, you know, in a good place offensively. Defensively, if they can get pressure on Joe Burrow, then I really think they'll be in a good spot, because that Rams offense isn't bad, like, to the season, to the point where it'll just stop and come to a screeching halt if things don't get, you know, going with one specific part of the offense. So I'll take the Rams here, boo me all you want, but that's just where I'm feeling at right now.
So I was hoping we'd have some disagreement on this segment, but I have the Rams as well, and let me just tell you why. Because this team's going to feast on Joe Burrow. Von Miller and Aaron Donald are mismatches up front for this Bengals offensive line that has not been able to stop anyone. Everyone has gotten pressure on Joe Burrow. Now, I'm going to provide some counterarguments too for all the Bengals listeners out there. Joe Burrow has really showed one thing over these past 3 weeks, and that is his incredible escapability. People don't think of him this way, but to me, when the pocket breaks down, he reminds me of Russell Wilson. Just the way he spins out of stuff, extends the play. He may not be the greatest running quarterback in the world, but when the pocket breaks down, he can spin out of a pocket just like Russell Wilson has done for all those years, and he can wait until the play's broken down and pick you apart defensively. But Von Miller and Aaron Donald are players that exist, and I just think Aaron Donald, his entire life has been waiting for a moment like this. He has talked this week in some of his media availability extensively about how embarrassed he was by the performance of the Super Bowl against New England. I think that, to me, the Super Bowl MVP is going to come down to Von Miller or Aaron Donald. And I think I'd put more money if we were putting in some prop bets on Aaron Donald, because I just think he is going to have a huge game. Second reason, Matthew Stafford can find and will pick on Eli Apple. And I have no defense for this. Eli Appletray, not very good at football. Not good at this sport. Like, not a great player. Struggles in coverage, makes poor decisions, seems to be a little bit undisciplined. And yeah, I mean, I don't trust Cooper Kupp against Eli Apple, and I don't trust Odell Beckham against Eli Apple, because I think Eli Apple gets toasted by both of them. I mean, am I crazy in thinking this?
No, I mean, look, Eli Apple, he's talked this mess over the past couple games in the playoffs, and you know, I hate to say he can because he's winning, I guess, but I mean, he's been roasted. He's been absolutely roasted, and I mean, I'm not trying to sit here and say, you know, Eli Apple doesn't deserve to go out there and be confident and play confident football, because he's an NFL football player. He's bounced around teams. He's been through an insane amount of adversity, you know, with his own personal play and whatnot. But you're getting roasted out there time and time again, dude. I mean, why are you talking? Why are you speaking? I mean, look, it's his personal right. Right, it's personal right to say whatever he wants, but if you're sitting out here getting roasted and there's clips, and I mean 4 or 5 minute clips on YouTube and a whole bunch of highlights on Twitter of you just getting absolutely destroyed by opposing wide receivers, why are you speaking? I mean, that annoys me. I respect players that can talk their crap and can back up the talk. Jalen Ramsey is one of those guys. Richard Sherman was one of those guys. Eli Apple is not one of those guys. So if he gets torched and the Bengals end up winning, he's going to still talk his crap. People are going to post all the highlights of him getting roasted, and he's not simply going to care because he's going to be the one laughing in the end if he wins a ring. But if he gets roasted and they lose, he's going to get Twitter. The Twitter mob is going to send a pack of round habit dogs at him in terms of insults and all that jazz. So he's going to get toasted. I think he's going to get toasted, whether it's Odell, whether it's Van Jefferson, whether it's Cooper Kupp. He's going to get toasted. It all matters if, you know, the only thing that matters is if the Bengals win at the end and he gets the last laugh. So we'll see. But I think he's going to get roasted for sure.
Trey, let me tell you this, my man. The Rams have the weapons here. Cooper Kupp, I mean, this guy's – we're in the middle of the NFL award show right now. Haven't gotten to Offensive Player of the Year yet, I don't believe, unless I miss something on Twitter. But my vote would be for Cooper Kupp for the Offensive Player of the Year. You've got Odell, who's come in and provided in big spots for them. And, you know, the guy I just keep going back to is Cam Akers, man. Like, he's been an X factor in some of these games. And I think against a Bengals run defense that has been stout, if he can break a few runs and be an effective weapon out of the backfield, I think that that's a real positive for this Bengals team.
Yeah. You make a good point on there for sure.
So for me, that's another point. My final reason is Zach Taylor likes to throw away early downs. And I mean, I heard a theory on the Ringer that the reason they run on early downs is because they don't want to get sacks on first down and be in second and 18. Okay, that's fine, I guess. But you're still going to be in a lot of like third and seven and second and eight. And those are still, analytics say, not great positions to be in. I'm unsure about the guy. Like, there are things you can point to and say, yeah, he is a pretty good coach. But there are other things where, like, in that Titans game, for example, like, Joe Burrow was calling his own plays for a majority of that game. And if you look at the plays he was calling, they were working better than Zach Taylor's calls. So I just don't know what to think of him. If he wins the Super Bowl, I'm going to have to give him a lot more respect. But He's just an enigma to me. I'm not really sure what to think about Zach Taylor. Where are you at on him?
I mean, I'm bullish on him because despite the Bengals putting out, you know, the record-setting numbers that they put up offensively this year, Zach Taylor still stood out at times where he – and this is a problem that, you know, a lot of inexperienced, I guess you say, play callers have. Well, not a lot, but some. Zach Taylor just doesn't have a good feel for the flow of a football game. And maybe that's too harsh, and maybe I could say he just doesn't have a consistently good enough flow for the football game. But there are times when Zach Taylor can, you know, like you said, the runs on first down, likely they're always ending up in second and longs as a result of those runs, and just like the Tennessee game. You know, there were times when Joe Burrow was getting hounded every single play and Zach Taylor just kept going to these long developing plays that gave the Titans pass rush plenty of time to get home and cause havoc back there. So, I mean, look, Zach Taylor, I think the players and the way they speak about him, they respect him, they like him, I guess. But Zach Taylor, you know, sometimes he just does some things that really question you, you know, question just why is he still a head coach, you know, at least still in a good, in the large capacity that he is at this point in time. So I don't know. And my opinion of him probably won't change regardless of how he performs in the Super Bowl, because there have been too many times in the past where he's just, you know, really made me doubt his abilities to be a successful head coach, especially for a team with such young talent and such a an impressive array of overall young talent that any head coach would want to take over and mold into their image, you know, as long as they're there. So I'm bullish on him, you know, until he shows me something different consistently, that he's not just this weird guy that's, putting his players in weird positions to succeed, and he's not being carried along by talent, you know, I'll still remain bullish. But if he can start reversing that, then my opinion of him will change. But, you know, that's what time is for, I guess.
You still with me, Trey?
Of course.
All right. Sorry. You dropped out for a second. I couldn't hear the last thing you said. I apologize.
No, you're fine. I just said until he gets until, you know, he shows me that the mistakes that he's making, until he shows me that he's past those mistakes and he's ready to evolve into a more steady sort of presence, you know, as a head coach, then my opinion will remain bullish on him. But that's all possible. That's all still possible. He can still change, but that's what time is for. So.
Absolutely. You know, and I don't, you know, it's nothing like personal either. It's just, I think Greg Rosenfeld put this best, like, if you watch Zach Taylor and the Bengals offense, which we have for the most part all year, like, they don't really have an identity. Like, you know, these new age guys like Kyle Shanahan, he has this tremendous zone running concept that works really well, and Matt LaFleur is gonna get you with the play action, and Sean McVay's got these deep crossing routes that'll tear you up, and he's really good at spacing wide receivers and all these different things. And Zach Taylor comes from those schools of thought, but what he does is he just, like, he steals from these, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just the way he operates the offense is that it's just, okay, let's do some zone running. All right, let's do some play action. Here's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And there's no, like, concrete identity where you can point at it and say, wow, that is unique to Zach Taylor's offense. And I think that sometimes causes us to have this wishy-washy feeling of him, which perhaps we shouldn't have.
Maybe. I'm just not all that, you know, in you know, the circumstances that you mentioned are fair. It's just I'm not ready to really pounce on the idea of, you know, him being some crazy, you know, good head coach that can excuse me, that could develop into one, you know, a good one into the future. That's all really what I'm saying.
No, and you know, I think that is that's a fair assessment to have. Okay, let me give you my score here, Trey, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
Rams 27, Bengals 21. I think that we start the game relatively tight. I feel like the Bengals might come out, score an early touchdown. Rams probably respond. And it's kind of tight back and forth. Maybe the Bengals get a lead at some point. Wouldn't shock me if the Bengals leg going into halftime. But I think at some point the Rams will lock in and just take over this game. And I think it'll be a close one, but a low-scoring Super Bowl. 27-21 isn't super low-scoring, but, you know, 48 points is – I don't know what the total is currently. But, you know, I feel like the Rams get it done that way. Do you have a score?
I was going to actually predict my score in the same realm of thinking as you, maybe 28-20 Rams. Just think the Rams are going to have too much talent, and that talent's proven. It's veteran experience. I think it's going to pull through for them and getting them their first championship. And actually, you know, well, I think it's going to pull through for them and winning a ring. Let's just say that.
Yeah, you know. I would agree with that. So the NFL honors are going on right now. I just wanted to pull up some of these awards that have been announced before we head out here tonight. The Offensive Player of the Year has yet to be announced. Excuse me as I just scroll through the NFL's website here. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Micah Parsons. Not really a surprise, right, Trey?
Nope, not at all. Micah Parsons was a beast all year long.
Comeback Player of the Year, Joe Burrow. Makes sense. He's in the Super Bowl. Came back from a really terrible knee reconstruction.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense to me, but he is the comeback player of the year. Assistant coach of the year, Dan Quinn. Let me find another big one here. Here's one that I know you'll want to talk about for a second. Coach of the year, Mike Vrabel, the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I don't think, and probably the only competition for, you know, with Mike Vrabel for this award was Matt LaFleur. But Mike Vrabel just had to really traverse through an extra long season with a multitude of his most important players missing games, suiting up so many different names every single week. Titans used an NFL record, I believe it was 91 total players for the season. So, it's a well-deserved award for Vrabel, and it's I'm sure he wishes he would be coaching the Super Bowl, but I guess a Coach of the Year award isn't so bad. And we just got the Offensive Player of the Year award winner announced.
Okay,
it was Rams wide receiver Cooper Kupp. That was to be expected.
Makes sense.
Cooper Kupp put up a crazy amount of numbers throughout the year. Even missed a couple games and still finished with the numbers that he got. So it was really, really impressive. So much deserved for Cooper Kupp for winning the Offensive Player of the Year award. And we'll see if he can continue his dominance on Sunday in Super Bowl 56.
Yes, we will see that for sure. Definitely well-deserved for him. Another guy that you probably could have put in the conversation for that, Deebo Samuel. Yeah. But Cooper Kupp put up crazy numbers throughout the year, and the connection with Matthew Stafford was just so good the whole year. Everyone knows the story about them going to breakfast or whatever. That's like the that was the cheesy NFL media, like, let's shove this down your throat on Sunday Night Football 12 times a year story of the year. That's our award, correct, Trey? We're awarding that to that storyline, but Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp ate breakfast together.
Oh, jeez.
Yes?
Are we? I mean, sure. Let's go ahead.
Okay. Officially, the End Zone Podcast Award for the NFL storyline that was shoved down our throat the most on Sunday Night Football this year, Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford ate breakfast together.
Yes.
A lot. That showed up several times. And it makes sense, too, because the Rams were on Sunday Night Football a lot this year.
They sure were.
All right. Defensive Player of the Year, T.J. Watt. Feel like we didn't talk a lot about T.J. Watt this year. We didn't talk about the Steelers a lot this year just because the offense was tough to watch. But
putrid, in fact.
T.J. Watt, man, he put up crazy numbers this year. Tied the all-time – broke the all-time sack record, I believe. Did he tie it?
I believe he came close or tied it. I don't think he broke it.
Gotcha. Played really well. To me, like, it's hard to not give Aaron Donald the Defensive Player of the Year. Honestly, to me, that's how good I think he is. And we talked about this a little bit on the Super Bowl storylines, but I feel really if he does have a big game Sunday, we are going to start viewing him as a guy who can compete with Lawrence Taylor as being potentially the best defensive player to ever play the game. I really believe that. And I hope that, you know, he has a big game because I tend to like to root for the guy. He seems like a good dude. While we're here, Trey, I guess, are they going to announce the MVP shortly here, do you think, or are we going to have to wait a little bit? I feel like that's probably the last award of the night. Looks like there's still
last award of the night is going to be the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award.
Okay, gotcha. MVP, we don't know who that is yet. I think we're going to wrap this up so you guys can have a short show to listen to. But Trey, you and I, let's pretend like we have AP votes. For me, the MVP is Tom Brady. Just no question about it. Led the league in every tangible passing stat. I get that he had 12 interceptions. Who cares? He still threw for 5,000 yards as a 44-year-old and 30-plus touchdowns. Like, every week that you watch Tom Brady was a masterclass in quarterback play this year. And he was my favorite player by far to watch on Game Pass this year. And you know how much I like quarterbacks. So he's my guy. He to me is the best quarterback in football, and that's what the MVP has devolved down to. And on the year he retires, it's only fitting to give him the MVP. I know Aaron Rodgers will probably win it because votes get taken in the regular season, but if I had a vote, I would have voted for Tom Brady.
Well, I think I would have still voted for Aaron Rodgers regardless because his numbers were incredible. And I think we saw how valuable that man.
Not as incredible as Tom Brady, though.
Well,
purely off numbers.
Well, that's fair. But I think we saw how valuable Aaron Rodgers was when the Green Bay Packers went on the road to Arrowhead to play the Kansas City Chiefs Jordan Love was thrown into the fire, and that Packers offense just couldn't get anything going. So I think that game showed how valuable Aaron Rodgers
like
was.
The same thing wouldn't have happened if Tom Brady left the lineup.
I'm not saying now. The same thing wouldn't have happened, Eric. I'm just saying that game showed how valuable Aaron Rodgers was, of course. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, if Tom Brady wasn't vaccinated, then he you know, the Bucs also would have lost a few games. I just, you know, I don't understand that argument. I think that Tom Brady was as valuable, if not more valuable, than Aaron Rodgers. And you're going to see that next year when the Bucs have to figure out who's going to play quarterback for him. So, I mean, yeah. But, you know, I understand what you're getting at, Trey. I just think that Tom Brady is the MVP. He outdid Rodgers in all the numbers, even though Rodgers threw less interceptions. So, I just think, to me, Brady is the MVP. Plus, I've soured slightly on Aaron Rodgers over the past few weeks. He also, I know, for me, like, I know the official voters don't look at playoff stuff, but to me, it does matter. And Brady played much better in the playoffs than Aaron Rodgers did.
Let's take a break. Trey, unfortunately, the reality of human life is that someday we will all pass on. No one wants to think about it. It's an uncomfortable topic, but it's important to take care of you and your loved ones when that day comes.
That's right, Eric. Fortunately for our listeners, we know of a great guy that can help you set up your wills and trusts.
Absolutely, Trey. Our friend Andrew McCullough has you covered. You can find him on Twitter at AMCCULLOUGH105. His DMs are open, and he and the folks at Brindley Sullivan can help you take care of you and your family's estate planning needs. Don't just take our word for it, though. Here is University of Utah star and current draft prospect, Britton Covey, to tell us more.
Hey guys, Britton Covey here. As my long time at the University of Utah is coming to a close, it's time for me to start thinking about my future. There's no one I trust more than Andrew McCullough at the firm of Brindley Sullivan for my estate planning needs. Give his office a call to set up a free consultation at 435-673-9220. Andrew's firm is headquartered in St. George, but he spends plenty of time along the Wasatch Front taking care of his needs. So call him and tell him that Britton Covey sent you.
More info at trustyourtrust.com.
All right, Trey, let's close out here by just doing something a little bit fun. I want to know, you know, we're both football fans, and we both enjoy watching football. So everyone has a little bit of a different, you know, setup. Typically on a day where maybe you don't have to work, because I know working on the Super Bowl is different than the day you have off on the Super Bowl. What is your typical Super Bowl game day routine?
For me, sometimes I go downstairs into the living room, or probably in this case, well, I might do the same thing this year, but I might go down to the living room, sit on the couch, turn on the game, sit and relax, eat some good food, and enjoy the game. Now, I think that's probably the standard and what every football fan probably dreams of when they're watching the Super Bowl at home. So that's my tradition. It's a little bit bland, I guess you could say, in comparison to others, but that's just how I roll.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit more detailed. I like to wake up around like 8 or 9. And usually I do my Super Bowl shopping day of. I know that's not smart and not advisable, but I like to go down to the store on Sunday morning because it's a little bit quieter, and you know, go in. I usually get, you know, standard Super Bowl for me is I get the guaca salsa, which is of course the guacamole that has salsa on top of it. Always delicious because you get a little bit of guac, you get a little bit of salsa. It's just a good time overall. Or I'll do homemade guac, which takes more time and more effort, but is worth it because You can make it however you want. I like garlic in my guacamole. And like a garlicky guacamole, that to me is just pure heaven. It's a great, great time. And I like onion in it too. I'm weird. I like onion and I like garlic. And those are the flavors I like to have in my guacamoles. So that's sort of what I shoot for there. But usually recently over the past few years, you know, I think it's gross any other time. And I don't get it any other time except for the Super Bowl, 7-layer dip with the beans and the guacamole and the sour cream and the shredded cheese on top. That on the Super Bowl just makes sense to me. You go all out. It's a little bit gross, but hey, it tastes good, you know, once a year. You can't overdo it with it. You can't have it multiple times a year, but one day a year, you can always have 7-layer dip. So I get my 7-layer dip and the chips, and then I go home. And to be honest with you, Trey, I don't like watching Super Bowl hype. I used to, but I just don't anymore. And what I'll usually do is I'll put on a playlist, kick back a little while, play some video games, usually watch, you know, a few YouTube videos or something probably Sunday, and then probably about half an hour before game time, if I'm at home, you know, that's when I go downstairs and I get all set up. You know, you get your blanket. I have a notebook, obviously. You get your blankets and your pillows and all your food set up down there. And then by the time you do that, if you start about a half hour before, game time kicks off and, you know, you do it. And then it's classic what everyone else does, I guess. But I just thought it might be fun to share some Super Bowl traditions on this podcast. So, yeah. Also, Trey, I don't know about you, but this is the most excited I have ever been, period, about a halftime performance. I am so hyped for whatever's going to go down Sunday. Just the star power involved is incredible.
Yeah, this is probably one of the most I've been excited for a halftime show ever, and the Weeknd performed last year and I was excited for that, but it should be fun. Also, doing shopping on the day of the Super Bowl is odd. I'll just say that we just got the announcement of who won MVP. It was, of course, Aaron Rodgers.
Gross.
Relax. I'll see if I can find the voting here. I can't really find the voting at this point in time, but Aaron Rodgers did win MVP. Yeah, 4-time MVP for Aaron Rodgers. We'll see where he goes this offseason, stays in Green Bay, pursues an opportunity to go elsewhere. We'll see. But now he's a 4-time MVP, but not playing in the Super Bowl and sitting at home. So, I think that's all I can say about Aaron Rodgers right now.
Spoiler, this offseason is going to be tedious, Trey. And this is going to be the most tedious storyline out there. Well, where's Aaron Rodgers going to go? One, the Packers have all the control here. He has no leverage. He thinks he has leverage, but he has no leverage. He has a handshake deal where he thinks he can get traded, but he is under contract next year. And I'm just going to say right now, I think more than likely he ends up staying in Green Bay. But I mean, they'll do everything to keep him before they let him walk out the door. There's just, I mean, tedious storylines, and people are going to tell me, oh, the Broncos might have a chance at him. They don't. It's just a tedious storyline, and you can make fun of me all you want when he does get traded. But I'm just going to say right now, he won't, and it's a tedious storyline. But this offseason is going to be full of tedious storylines, Trey. Full of them.
Yeah, it sure will. That's why the NFL has evolved into everybody's early spring drama, or reality drama, TV show, whatever you want to call it. So it'll be fun. I will say that for sure. Well, we're done here. It's been fun previewing the Super Bowl with you, man. Why don't you let everybody know what our plans are for the podcast after Super Bowl 56.
Yeah, I mean, classic recap style. Been doing this even before Trey was with us. Think the best way to recap the Super Bowl is right after the game. There's really no rush like it. You get done with the game, you watch them go up to the podium, you watch somebody lift the Super Bowl, whoever that's going to be, and then you just rush. And then it's just running, basically. You're just like rushing to get set up, rushing to get your notes set together, get everything in order, get everyone involved, get on the podcast, get after it. And we'll talk about Super Bowl storylines. We'll talk, you know, legacy count. We'll do some legacy stuff at the end. We'll talk about the game for a little while. We'll talk about some legacy stuff. And then, Trey, as is tradition, we're going to take a week off, at least. I might do something separate because our good friend Ryan has, like, tried to get on the podcast so many times, but he has to cancel and I have to cancel and nothing works out. So if I have some downtime, which I don't even know if I will, when I get back, life is about to speed up again. But we might have something up a week after the Super Bowl, but plan on no. And then we'll come back and it'll be podcasts for a week, once a week, until free agency slows down. And then after free agency slows down, I think we will probably take another week break and talk some draft stuff. And then we'll do a lot of stuff on draft week and a lot of stuff the week after draft week. And then, you know, June will hit and it'll be the off season for us. And we'll take our true vacation for a few weeks in June. So, but for after the Super Bowl, expect a podcast in your podcast feeds by Monday morning. Hopefully we'll have it up Sunday night. Hopefully this goes up tonight if I don't, unless I keep Trey up too late. But my promise to you is either Trey or I will get up a podcast as soon as we're done recording on Sunday night. So that's our plan, Trey. And, you know, I'm ready for it. You know, it's always a little bittersweet, the end of football, because, yeah, it means that we get a bunch of free time, but that gets taken up by school and work and everything. And, you know, it's the off season. Enjoy the off season, as I like to say. So we'll get to the off season and we'll enjoy a week and then we'll come back and we'll start looking at what's going on this off season. Should be fun.
Yes, sir. Should be a fun off season for.
And I just wanted to say to our listeners, I listened back to our podcast because I was cutting down some video clips. Trey, you get to call me on stuff. I mean, I say the word like so much. Like, I just did it right there. I was listening to the podcast. And I use that word so much. Every single time I have a non sequitur, I put the word there. I do not need to be saying that word so much. And I wanted so badly to say, like, I don't need to be saying that word so much, but that would defeat the purpose. So I'm going to be trying a lot harder. I may sound a little hesitant over these next few weeks, but to not say like, and if I say like a lot, like, but right there, see, it pops up and then it recurs and there's two or three in a row. And I find it so incredibly annoying, Trey. It was incredible. And I need you to call me out on it and keep me honest here, because I need to get better at talking. I've only been, oh, but by the way, we should celebrate, Trey, at some point. Let's just pretend that it is. But I don't know if you've noticed on our podcast counter, we are at over 400 episodes. Our 400th episode was like 3 weeks ago. We never did anything for it. We should have like a 420th or something podcast during the off season. where we bring some Pepsis and some Coke and a little bit of iced tea, maybe crack them open and, you know, have ourselves a grand old time. So yeah, And that's the other thing. I mean, I just came in here to say, I say like too much. And then I go on this tangent and I've been talking for 5 minutes. No wonder these podcasts go 2 hours sometimes. I've just got to talk less.
We'll work on that. but yeah, me and Eric, we're out of here. Spread the podcast wherever you can. Your mother, friends, family, wherever you can spread it, please spread it. It would mean a great deal to us. Most importantly, enjoy the Super Bowl on Sundays, the biggest spectacle in all of American sports. It's a time we all enjoy and a time we should all cherish. So we'll see you guys back here on Sunday night or Monday morning after the winner of the Super Bowl is revealed. And yeah, that's all we have to say. So whenever you're listening to this, have a great day, night. Enjoy some football and peace out.